Chapter 2. The Oracle. Yokai. The Curse. Lucius paced the pillared chamber, caring little for the wonders on display. Here and there a weapon caught his eye, but even the best were too alien or too inelegant for his tastes. His flesh was restless, his eyes ceaselessly roaming the pavilion's interior. Usually he had perfect awareness of his environment, but the elastic dimensions of the pavilion's interior made it difficult to form an exact map of his surroundings. He followed an apparently random path through the museum's exhibits, pausing now and then to examine an item. Menkaure, Tolbeck, and Hathor Mart were doing the same, but their interest was genuine. Sobek hadn't moved since Araman left, yet Lucius sensed vibrations running through him, as though he were a plucked string tuned too tightly. Lucius grinned, the web of self-inflicted scars turning it into a rictus leer as he saw Sanact approach, the warrior whose death he'd sought on the planet of the sorcerers.
"You have no appreciation for these artifacts," said Sanact. "So what are you doing?"
The warrior of the Thousand Suns was a sublime bladesman, a killer like him, and Lucius slipped his fingers towards his sword. Sanact saw the movement and cocked his head. He touched crosswise fingertips to the pommels of his own weapons and said,
"You and I will cross blades again, son of Fulgrim. But it will not be here."
"Lucky for you," said Lucius. "If it wasn't for Araman, I'd have taken your head."
Sanact didn't rise to the bait.
"There is no threat here. I would have seen it."
"There's nothing obvious, agreed," said Lucius, rolling his shoulders in readiness, "which only makes me more suspicious."
Sanact gestured to the yokai and the silent Tartaruki at the foot of the twin screw stairs, making it look like he was pointing out particularly impressive examples of weaponry.
"You think the Tartaruki are dangerous?"
"Not to me,"
nodded Lucius, going along with the charade.
"But the hundreds of robots outside might be."
"They are not robots."
"So I heard. But there's nothing put together by men I can't take apart."
He snorted in derision.
"They're not even armed."
A bloom of supernovae faded, and Araman found himself within a subterranean cavern. The recreation of an oracular temple was complete, down to sulphurous fumes drifting from fissures in the obsidian floor. Like the dwelling place of the Sleeper of Unkai, it was red-litten by a thick column of volcanic fumes bleeding from a rune-encircled shaft at its centre. At the edge of the shaft, and silhouetted against its infernal glow, were around 30 kneeling figures. The billowing fumes obscured their true number, and save for beaked masks that resembled those of the plague doctors of old Earth, they were naked. Sweat dripped from their emaciated bodies as the heat slowly roasted them alive.
"Who are they?" asked Araman.
"The Dread Scribes," said Temaluka. And he saw each figure had an open book to its left and right, into which they wrote feverishly with a charcoal stylus in both hands.
"Psi vessels through which the iron oculus delivers its visions."
"And where is your mighty oracle?" asked Araman.
"I am here."
The psi contact was so sudden, so violent, it drove him to one knee. Instantly he threw up a kind shield and rose into the eighth enumeration, gathering his powers to fight. The words came amid a tide of shrieking voices, driven insane by the tyranny of endless isolation. Araman lifted his head as the smoke rising from the shaft cleared and saw the iron oculus, a hulking sarcophagus suspended over the shaft on a number of blackened chains. A brute effigy of a thing, it had been beaten into shape from patchwork scraps of sheet metal. Seams like stitches and riveted iron straps held it together. Less a sarcophagus, more an instrument of torture from the darkest ages of persecution. Araman sensed a loathsome conjoining within the iron cage, as though twin souls were alloyed together in one monstrous whole. Lunatic screams echoed in his skull, a torrent of voices desperate to be heard. The frantic scratching of the Dread Scribes rose to new heights. Frenzied hands transcribed the oracle's visions like men possessed.
From deep despair he rises, a lost son and fallen father, the warrior of two faces to lead the Knights of Shadow. Hush! The exile stands before us. Not yet in banishment, but many roads from here divide. Which path would he take? We know, we know. Tell him, tell him.
The voices were maddening, speaking in a garbled rush, interleaved and yammering. Their words were nonsense, the ravings of bedlamites, and Ahriman paid them little heed.
Ahriman, long have I awaited your arrival.
The whirlwind of voices faded to little more than a rustling, as the dominant soul wrestled the others to submission, like leaves scattered by autumn winds.
Who are you?
He asked.
I am the Iron Oculus.
A name bestowed upon you by others, said Ahriman. Tell me your true name.
You believe you can learn in an instant what it took your sire millennia to prize from my lips.
And the Crimson King knows your name?
Not the Byblo, from whom the crude matter of your flesh was spliced. Your true sire.
The creature sought to goad him with the insult, to anger him into rashness. Ahriman had treated with the blandishments, threats, and snares of the Neverborn many times, and was beyond such blatant traps.
You mean the Emperor?
The Ipsissimus, yes. The Oathbreaker.
Another obvious barb, but even after Prospero, Nikia, and the revelation of the Emperor's concealment of the great ocean's true nature, it still rankled to hear a warp creature speak ill of the Imperium's master.
For now, you may call me a Forgomon.
Ahriman flinched at the tearing syllables. Two of the dread scribes collapsed, blood pouring from their beaked masks.
That is not your true name.
But it fits my design to wear it for now.
I will learn your true name, demon, promised Ahriman.
I do so enjoy hearing the old titles,
said the Iron Oculus, and Ahriman felt its amusement like rusted hooks down his spine.
It pleases me to know you can no longer deny the truth of our nature.
I know full well what you are, said Ahriman.
Again he felt the bound creature's mirth.
I doubt that very much. You are a cunning one, Azek. But even your knowledge has its limits.
I know more than you think.
Come. There is no shame in admitting to ignorance. Is not the first axiom of wisdom admitting you know nothing?
And there is a wealth of difference between knowing nothing and not knowing enough, said Ahriman, drawing the ether into his flesh and feeling the savage exultation of its potential. But I did not come here to debate the teachings of a dead man.
Booming laughter filled the cavern. Smoke writhed from the cracks in the ground like serpents of temptation. The dread scribes ceased their writings in unison, turning their warp-lensed bird masks upon Ahriman.
We know why you came, said the oracle. Does she?
A surge of powerful etheric discharge sparked behind Ahriman. His armor locked tight, and a lethal blade of psychic fire appeared at his bare throat.
She does now, said Temeluka.
Menkaura stared at the ancient grimoire encased in the crystal cabinet with mounting excitement. Its leather binding had decayed to scraps, and the ancient pages were tissue-thin. The illuminated symbol on its frontispiece had faded to a ghost of its former brilliance. But the Enochian names of the angels within its overlaid geometric forms were unmistakable.
Sigillum Dei Emaeth, said Menkaura,
suspecting he beheld the last surviving copy of Tractatus Astrologico Magicus.
The pure verities of the Queen's astrologer.
He pressed a palm against the glass, feeling a faint tremor from the energy field keeping the grimoire from crumbling to dust. To examine such a tome without destroying it would require the greatest adepts of the Pavoni and Raptora weaving their most artful raptures.
Ah, Phocis Takar,
Would that I had your skills, he mused, remembering the captain of the Second Fellowship as he had been, not the flesh-changed monster he had become. Menkaura was Corvidae, and though schooled in the kine artes of the Raptora, as were all who survived the Dominus Liminus, he had not the mastery required for so delicate a task. After the doom of Prospero, few remained who did. Instead, he rose into the fourth enumeration, freeing his subtle body from the shackles of its fleshy prison. Such a potent record of the magician's deeds could yet yield secrets without physical examination. He eased his consciousness through the crystal, allowing it to blow the echoes of the grimoire to life like the dimmed embers of a fire. The imprinted essence of the dead magician rose from the grimoire like lake fog. Menkaura felt the previous owner's presence as a memory of ghosts, the sense of someone seen out of the corner of his eye. A practitioner of the arte, certainly, perhaps even the grimoire's author. A seeker after knowledge, a warrior mystic like every brother of the Thousand Suns. Someone out of time, a walker between worlds, a man of triumph. Arrogant and so sure he could never fail. Menkaura shook his head at the man's foolishness. The Thousand Suns knew better than any that even the greatest could fall, and fall hard. He gasped as he felt the stabbing fire of sympathetic pain, a repercussion from the past. Menkaura looked down, and for a fleeting moment he saw the fiery kine blade that had killed the magician jutting from the phantom ruin of his chest. The long-dead magician's disbelief warred with his pain, a childlike sense of outrage that he had been denied something. Menkaura staggered as he felt the man die, his mind recoiling from the grimoire and careening around the exhibits. Horror engulfed him as yet more visions of death swept through him. Agony as the wielder of a six-barreled pistol had his limbs hacked off. Searing heat as armor designed for a creature with multiple arms became white-hot and burned its wearer to death. A sword, a mirror, an eagle-faced helm, a filigreed jewelry box. Death draped every one of them. Innumerable treasures that were not treasures at all, but trophies taken from the murdered corpses of the Torquatum's victims.
Everything is a tombstone, he said. A monument to murder.
Menkaura's subtle body snapped back into his flesh, and the usual fleeting claustrophobia and revolting sense of meat and decay washed through him. He blinked away a haze of dizziness and drew in a breath of air. He tasted metal and caustic oils, chrome and hot plastic. A yokai stood next to him. Blue-hot blades of psychic fire blazed to life at its fists. The first clove Menkaura's armor and split his primary heart before ripping down to burst his lungs. The second swept around in a decapitating strike. Another sword intercepted it, silver steel and buzzing with photonic energies. A bolt pistol fired deafeningly close, and the yokai's head exploded.
I thought you people could see the future, snapped Lucius.
You mean to take the iron oculus from us, said Temeluca.
I do, agreed Araman, feeling the heat of the etheric blade at his throat.
Why?
The Crimson King demands I do so.
Temeluca circled around Araman, a crackling sword of indigo fire extending from her fingertips. His armor would offer no protection against such a blade. He sensed Temeluca's desire to end his life warring with her deep confusion as to why she had not already done so.
I told you to go, she said. I gave you a chance to leave this place alive.
Did you give those whose possessions you parade below the same chance? Said Araman. My brothers may not guess the truth of it, but I know a mortis reliquary when I see one.
They were all like you, said Temeluca,
her bladed hand trembling with the urge to thrust into his neck.
Knowing their future was never enough, they wanted to change it. Like you, they sought to steal knowledge that was not theirs to take and bend its power to their own ends.
Araman sensed falsehood and said,
Then why warn me? It was not for my benefit, was it?
I gave you the chance to change your fate, said Temeluca,
her coloured eye churning with desperate sighlight. Araman lifted his gaze to the brute form of the hanging sarcophagus, feeling its power oozing outwards. Whatever wards bound the iron oculus were nowhere near as secure as Temeluka believed.
It was not my fate you sought to change,
said Ahriman, as the control of his armor crumbled.
It was yours.
Temeluka cried in release and thrust her blade for his heart. Ahriman's Hecker staff swung down to intercept it. Etheric energies blazed. He spun the staff and extended his hand. Temeluka's fiery blade was snuffed out, a candle against a hurricane. She flew at him, borne aloft on silent winds, etheric power coruscating along her limbs. The air around Ahriman shrieked as it ignited. He blinked, and a skin of sub-zero air encased him. Roaring, superheated vapor exploded from Ahriman. Temeluka flew into it, and her screams were piteous as the searing mist boiled the flesh from her bones. Even as she fell, her command of the enumerations was quelling the pain. Her robes hung scorched and bloody, her meat now skinless and weeping. Too agonized to reach for the higher powers, she cast lightning from her hands in jagged arcing bolts. Ahriman's staff broke them to glassy splinters, and he lashed her raw with the reflected power. Temeluka reeled in pain, her mind's defences in tatters. Easy prey for an adept of his skill and ruthlessness to tear apart from the inside. He bombarded her with phantasms, filling her skull with the manifold horrors of Prospero's annihilation. All the nightmarish things he had seen, the unimaginable losses he had suffered. He concentrated them into one merciless skewer and drove it right through the heart of her. Temeluka screamed as physical agony and psychic terror coalesced in a blaze of unimaginable suffering. The only refuge was madness, and the shattered ruin of her mind fled to darkness rather than endure another moment of that day. She collapsed, little more than hollowed-out meat. Her chest hiked in unnatural rhythms as the autonomic functions of her brain went into seizure. Her curious eyes were molten craters, burned out by the ravaging psychic fire. Ahriman stood over the twitching body, feeling nothing for her pain. What had ended her, he had suffered in reality. But legion minds and legion flesh could endure grief and pain beyond any mortal tolerance.
You are deceived,
said Ahriman, though Temeluka was utterly beyond comprehension.
The iron oculus was never your prisoner to guard.
No, is it yours to take?
Her features went slack, and whatever wisdom she had left to impart went unsaid. Ahriman lifted his gaze to the iron sarcophagus. Its power had withdrawn, coiled within its metal cell like a predatory serpent whose monstrous appetite was now sated.
I'm right, am I not? You were never their prisoner.
Of course not.
You kept her blade from my neck. You broke her hold on my armor.
Yes.
Why?
She meant to kill you. And we have our bargain yet to strike.
Ahriman stepped towards the hanging sarcophagus. Its chains creaked as it swung slowly towards him. The stitched seams split, bleeding droplets of raw ether into the shaft below.
What bargain?
What in Fulgrim's name is a mandala?
Yelled Lucius, spitting blood as he picked himself up from the glass and timber ruins of a display case. Disintegrating leather and paper fluttered around him. Minkora lay slumped next to Lucius, seemingly more distressed at the drifting scraps than the grievous wound in his chest. The yokai whose hammering psi shock had felled Lucius was a molten mass of fused metal and plastic. Tolbeck's powers were ascendant in a brutally direct way.
A mandala is a ritual symbol used to represent the universe, said Sanakt,
blocking a scythe blade composed entirely of vibrating air molecules.
Its cosmic symbolism focuses the mind of a practitioner as a means of establishing a sacred formation in which to fight.
What, you mean a kill circle?
Said Lucius. A simplistic way of putting it, but yes.
You sons and your fancy words,
said Lucius, spinning on his heel to decapitate a porcelain-masked yokai with a crack of his vile whip. The swordsman dropped to one knee and cut low, His silver blade sliced the slender ceramic and steel calves of another yokai. It crashed to the metal decking, and a blaze of tar-black ether fire shrieked from its contoured skull. The automata surrounded the Thousand Suns like greenskins around a last shield wall. No sooner had Menkaura fallen than Sanakt and the rest of the Thousand Suns formed the mandala around the Corvidae adept. A moment later, the yokai host from beyond the Black Gate poured in to attack. At least 200, maybe more. They came at them with a lethal mix of psychic blades, integral cannons, kine powers, and pyromantic energies. Sanakt had faced too few to yet discern any correlation between the goetic sigils and each yokai's power. His hawk blade deflected the downward strike of a psychic edge as he sprang to his feet. The yokai's inflamed weapon reversed direction with blinding speed. He leaned into it, letting the psi blade carve the crimson and silver of his shoulder plate. Spinning inside the yokai's guard, he hammered his jackal blade through the center of its blank skull. Black fire burned along the blade as he wrenched it clear and blocked yet another attack. The fight was breathtakingly swift, blows exchanged at a pace no mortal bladesman could match. The yokai were machine-fast and warp-cunning, but the Thousand Suns fought with transhuman reflexes alloyed to unmatched psychic discipline. Arrayed in the sacred geometry of the mandala, they fought shoulder to shoulder as brothers, their minds linked to seamlessly blend their abilities in a cohesive whole. Tolbeck threw up blazing shields against the shredding gunfire of the yokai's fist cannons. Ceramic shells turned to hot vapor in mid-flight, still traveling at supersonic speeds, but harmless to Legion battleplate. In return, the Pyrai adept crafted darts of phosphorescent brilliance that pierced the armor of the automata and cored them to the heart of their bindings. The warp scraps died in blazing plumes of incandescent fire. Hathor Mart engaged the Tartaruki, freezing their flesh for Sobek to smash apart with kine blows more powerful than a thunderhammer in the hands of a Sekhmet champion. Ahriman's Practicus grunted as he fought, veins standing out like pulsing feed lines on his neck. Though grievously wounded, Menkaura used his Corvidae seer sight to gift each warrior with prescient reaction times. They fought at the edge of their abilities, but only Lucius appeared to be relishing the ferocious skill of their enemies.
"Fast for robots,"
said the swordsman, perversely proud of just how little he understood this foe. He cracked his lash and laughed as its barbed tip split open a seamless skull. Black fire geezered from within, a piercing shriek of pained release to those whose senses were open to the great ocean.
"I told you, they are not robots,"
replied Sanakt, rolling his wrists and sidestepping a thrust to his groin.
"Didn't you hear what Ahriman said?"
He stamped to the side and buckled an attacking yokai's knee inwards. It staggered, and Sanakt scissored both blades through its neck. He stepped back from the spurting black fire.
"I weep to destroy such exquisitely fashioned artifacts."
"Speak for yourself,"
yelled Lucius, using the shattered chest of a falling yokai to vault into the air and sever three enameled heads before his feet hit the ground. Lucius landed lightly, spinning with both arms extended and a reptilian leer splitting the reticulated skin of his hairless skull. He snapped his wrist, and the lash coiled around its ebon handle in a manner altogether too organic for Sanakt's liking.
"Are such wasteful theatrics truly necessary?"
he asked.
"Oh, they're dead, aren't they?"
countered Lucius.
"Save your energy for the next 100, then." "Enough talking,"
commanded Hathor Mart, sweeping his arms out to blast a wedge of frozen air through the yokai.
"Keep to the 6th enumeration. Menkaura, if you cannot fight, seek out the minds of the Tartaruki. Kill them, and it may break the yokai's link to the great ocean."
Sanakt risked a glance over his shoulder. Menkaura sat on his haunches at the center of a bloody lake, propped against the remains of the broken display case. His eyes were closed, but he nodded, and Sanakt felt the seer's mind cast itself into the great ocean for the means to defeat their foes.
"Look at him!"
snapped Sobek, striding to the forefront of the mandala with his staff and gauntlet held before him like an ancient prophet.
"Our brother is all but dead!"
"Wait!"
cried Tolbeck.
"What are you doing?"
"Ending this!"
roared Sobek, eyes wide and skin both ruddy and taut.
"No! The mandala will be broken. Its geometry cannot hold with only 4 adepts.
Sobek ignored him and spat words of power Sanakht had never dared read in close proximity, each one a rusted nail hammered through his skull. As every deceitful syllable poisoned the air, living nightmares coalesced in tattered ghost slicks around Ahriman's practicus. Crack-horned things, broken-toothed things, negative imprints of terrors best left to the shadows. Sobek drew them into his body with a roar, and every one of the thousand sons staggered at the repercussive sickness of their dread touch.
"What in ruin's name is he doing?"
said Lucius.
"Reform the mandala,"
said Hathor Mat, ignoring the swordsman's question.
"The voids of Dreki,"
said Sanakht, feeling his eyes weep tears of blood in response. No sooner had he foolishly named the evocation than a host of darkly radiant comets erupted from Sobek's staff, howling like war dogs with the taste of blood on their tongues. They ignored the horde of smooth-skinned automata, slashing between them towards the living, breathing Tartaruki. The chronicles of Ursh and other poetic grimoires spoke of forbidden skyomancy summoning these voids, malignant warp wraiths that unraveled their victims' souls and devoured them piece by piece. Until now, Sanakht had believed them lurid inventions. The dark comets struck the Tartaruki, and he knew differently. The guardians of the iron oculus were literally turned inside out. Bones snapped like tinder, meter upon meter of veins and arteries unspooled in wet ropes, organs detonated like grenades, and teeth and bone shards flew like bullets as apocalyptic quantities of blood aerosolized in a vile mist. The screams of the Tartaruki echoed long after their flesh was ruined. It was an animal sound, the sound of prey being ripped to pieces by spiteful predators that kill for pleasure. The broken bodies fell apart like sodden rags, and the fury of the automata was extinguished in the same instant. Without the Tartaruki, the controlling animus of the yokai was broken. They froze like a phalanx of Cybernetica battle robots with malfunctioning slave collars. The entities within shrieked in anger as they were cast back into the great ocean. Sobek's ploy had succeeded, but the voids allowed him no breath to speak the words of ending, no motion to cast a rune of severance. The wraith creatures twisted towards the thousand suns, hungry for fresh souls to rend.
"Sobek!"
shouted Hathor Mat.
"Stop this now!"
But Sobek remained locked in place, undone by the power he had unleashed and the pact he had unthinkingly made. His staff dropped from palsied fingers, and his mouth stretched wide with a crack of tearing cartilage and snapping sinew.
"The sign of Amaterasu!"
cried Menkaura from the center of the mandala. His sudden shout drew a froth of bright blood from his mouth and chest.
"Invoke its sigil now, all of you!"
Sanakht fought to visualize the complex sigils and somatic forms of the Amaterasu's warding configuration, but the howling, gibbering wraiths filled his mind with broken glass. He felt Menkaura's presence within his psyche, guiding him as he had guided so many of the Legion over the decades. Menkaura had learned his craft from Magister Templi Amaterasu, who had in turn received his wisdom from Major Sfanek himself, whose master had been Magnus the Red. And still it wasn't enough. The voids struck the mandala and broke it open with howling glee. The impact swatted Sanakht from his feet, and fetid winds, reeking of corrupted blood, clogged his helm's filters. The mandala was broken, and each warrior fought alone. The voids had slain the Tartaruki in an instant, but these were legion warriors they faced. Sobek remained isolated, locked within his armor like a statue. The voids ignored him, sensing his flesh offered no sport. Hathor Mat stood over Menkaura, a swirling corona of biomantic power keeping the wraiths at bay for now. A pillar of blinding fire obscured Tolbeck as he gave free rein to his powers. With the flesh change a very real danger, the Crimson King had warned them against such displays. But what other choice was there? All thoughts of the sign of Amaterasu were forgotten, as the spectral forms of the muttering wraiths surrounded Sanakht like frenzied sharks. They came at him in a rush of night-black claws and freezing shadows, faster than anything he had fought before. Each touch was a blade of ice in his heart, slowing him, making him vulnerable. He found himself back to back with Lucius, their affinity as swordsmen naturally pulling them together. They spun in a kill circle of their own, forced into a bargain of mutual trust neither really believed. Not that they had a choice.
"You have your wish," said Sanact. "What wish?" "Finding a foe who can kill you."
Lucius laughed as he struck out at the voids.
"These things,"
he said.
"No, this isn't my death."
Sanact read the utter certainty flaring in the swordsman's aura and wondered how he could be so sure. Later, much later, Sanact would wonder if Lucius had known of the eternal damnation lying in wait for him. And even if he had, would he have changed it? None of them would die this day. Sanact and Lucius fought with skill that had not been seen since the rival champions had duelled at the walls of Lost Truva. And had fate decreed their legions remain true, such courage would have become legend in the Imperium. With Hathormat on his knees and Menkaura sliding into death's embrace, Tolbeck alone fought the voids on an equal footing. Pillars of gleeful flame scattered their darkness as spears of molten light burned them back. And still it wasn't enough. Hathormat fell to the shadows as if beneath a murder of ravens. Tolbeck's fire was brutally smothered by the aching cold of the voids. A flurry of clawed shadows penetrated Sanact's defences, plunging into his ribs and freezing his heart. He fell, plunging into what felt like a depthless pool of glacial water. None of them would die this day. Ahriman made sure of that. The blood was barely dry on Ahriman's lips, made bitter by his unlooked-for bargain, yet rich with promise. At the instant of the sworn pledge, the oracular cavern vanished as though it had never existed. In a very real sense, it had not. Ahriman experienced a sense of falling, a rush of motion. He had a momentary glimpse of shattered display cabinets and a host of crowing darkness surrounding his fellow legionaries. They fought alone, losing, dying. The floor rushed up to meet him, though Ahriman understood he was not falling in any literal sense of the word. He felt the iron oculus, its looming presence like a leaden weight, dragging a drowning man to his doom. They arrived with force enough to crater the floor. Ahriman knelt, slamming his ebon staff down with a psychic shockwave that scattered the darkness like wind-blown chaff. The floor ruptured, heaving into the air with racking seismic violence. Giant slabs split like frosted glass, and streamers of star-bright etheric energy geysered in iridescent clouds. The iron oculus squatted at the center of the crater like the blasphemous idol of a long-dead and unlamented empire. Sealed within that ghastly prison, the thing that called itself Aphogomon waited upon his word. Ahriman nodded, sealing their compact.
"Do it," he said.
A howling gale filled the chamber like booming laughter. It drew the seething clouds of ether to the canted form of the iron oculus, as though it took a vast and unending breath. Even as the voids gathered their strength for another assault, the dread oracle of the Torquatum released that breath. It exploded outwards in a crackling ring of too bright light, a halo of divine retribution. This was a light no shadow could evade, and it burned the voids to shrieking ash in the blink of an eye. Miniature dust devils of Tarryash fought to hold on to this reality, but their time here was over. The swordsman Lucius stood in the midst of the last faded remnants of the creatures. They dissipated as the grinning killer watched with repugnant self-satisfaction, as though he had defeated the creatures single-handedly. Ahriman exhaled the tension from his lungs and rose to his feet. He closed his eyes and pushed his perceptions outwards, questing for the lives of his warriors. Every one of them was here. Alive. Tolbeck, Hathormat, Menkaura, Sanact, Sobek. Ahriman's eyes snapped open.
"Flesh change!"
he shouted. He ran to Sobek. The rush of seer sight misted Ahriman's eyes with throbbing pain. His practicus stood unmoving, resplendent in crimson and silver, as magnificent as the sculptures that once graced the pyramids of Tisca. Stuttering across that image was a grating ether spectre, a future echo of Sobek's fate. It thrashed in the midst of a hideous transformation. Ghostly battleplate burst open like shattered eggshell, and cancerous flesh erupted in a riot of uncontrolled mutation and malignant growths.
Hathomut!
He shouted.
To me!
Ahriman's senses reached out, feeling the dreadful ambition of Sobek's flesh. The Emperor's miracle unravelling, the sword hanging over every warrior of the Thousand Suns.
Help me!
Said Sobek through gritted teeth, his locked expression one of abject horror. Only once before had Ahriman seen such naked fear in the face of a Legion brother. Knowing your own body was rebelling, seeking to throw off its perfect form and assume some new and horrific aspect, was surely a terror unlike any other.
What happened?
He demanded, as Hathormat pushed past him to place a palm on the back of Sobek's shaven skull.
What did this to him?
The damn fool did it to himself,
said Hathormat. A nimbus of light gathered behind the Pavoni adept's eyes as he sought to quell the gathering horde of mutations.
Oh, he saved us, said Sanakt, appearing behind Ahriman. Explain. The voids of Draki, said Sanakt. Sobek called them from the abyss to slay the Tartaruki.
And then they turned on us, grunted Hathormat, his breath like glacial mist. Ahriman shook his head.
The sign of Amaterasu. We had no notion what he was conjuring until it was too late, said Sanakt.
He broke the mandala on his own, said Hathormat.
A frosted call bloomed in Sobek's eyes, his skin losing its mottled hue as Hathormat's powers spread through him, shock-freezing his flesh.
Will that stop it? Asked Sanakt.
Hathormat let his ice-rimed hand fall from Sobek's frozen solidity. His eyes were too blue, too webbed with frost.
No, he said. This is a delaying tactic at best. It will not stop the oncoming flesh change, but will slow it.
Perhaps enough to return our brother to the planet of the sorcerers, said Ahriman.
Perhaps not, said Hathormat, turning on Ahriman. For all your cunning, and after all your researches and theories, you are no nearer to ending the curse.
The curse. The secret, never spoken aloud for fear of awakening the traitor within their own flesh. Like so many other terrible flaws hidden deep within the legions, flaws none dared admit. The phantoms haunting the skeletal pyramids, rusting beneath the nine suns, gibbered of such things, but only the maddened beast packs listened to their whispers.
I can save you,
Ahriman promised Sobek.
I will save you.
Lucius circled behind Sobek, captivated by what Hathormat had done. His voyeuristic fascination revolted Ahriman.
How?
Ahriman turned. Menkaura's question was simple, yet Ahriman had no easy answer for him. The seer's body was bitterly wounded, an arm hooked across Tolbeck's shoulder guard, all that was keeping him upright.
You know how, said Ahriman.
Menkaura shook his head.
No, the Crimson King forbade it.
So I am just to let him die,
said Ahriman, turning to face each of his brothers in turn.
What if this happens to you, Sanakt? Or you, Hathormat? Should I let you all die? Any of you? And you, Menkaura, your aura is fading. Your life hangs by a thread. Imagine I were an apothecary, but the Crimson King forbade me from using my skills to save you.
It is not the same, said Menkaura. You risk...
It's exactly the same, snapped Ahriman.
I would hold the means to save your life, but misplaced faith and a stricture that makes no sense will condemn you to an agonizing death. Have you forgotten Phocis Takar? Have you? You remember the monster he became? Or Hegza? Or Kapfed? Hastar?
I remember them all,
said Menkaura through a mouthful of blood.
I also remember Astenu. I remember how your arrogance saw him perish in fiery agony.
Yes, he died, said Ahriman. But at least I tried. If the change takes you, would you be willing to die rather than have me try to save you?
When the change comes for me, you must kill me as Russ killed Hastar, swiftly and without mercy.
Meaning was veiled in Menkaura's words. It always was. But had his brother's seer sight glimpsed a measure of his fate? A destiny where death was preferable to life.
Enough, said Hathormat. I cannot hold Sobek's flesh forever. We have to get him to the Kemet and take him home.
Ahriman rounded on Hathormat.
The world of the Nine Suns is not our home.